This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
We got a lot of stuff on the show today. Nick Wallenda, King of the High Wire, talking about the volcano walk he's going to do in Nicaragua. Lysak got sports in your shorts. One of my favorite people in the whole world. And one of the very first friends I ever made in this business was a guy named Whitfield Crane, Bad Ugly Kid Joe. And he's a wonderful guy. He's a good example of how to live your life. If he's not, you know, out with Ugly Kid Joe, he's doing Mass Mental with Truilo, or he's doing the wedding band we'll talk about with Kirk and Robert and everybody, and doing wedding songs you hate to hear at weddings.
Mm-hmm.
It's a genius idea. Working with the Australian Symphony. But he's a traveler. This is what he does. Since I've known him, he's never had a home. He's always had a backpack and a credit card, and he works and he creates and then he moves and he just keeps going through Costa Rica. I mean, he's been all over the world. So he actually came up with an idea. He goes, this is fun to talk about traveling because that's what we talk about. So it's a little game we like to call Where's Whit? Where in the world is Whitfield Crane? And we'll take a couple calls. I'll give you a couple clues as to where he's at.
The world is a big place, full of many wonders. And there's one man who's dedicated his life to spanning the globe. From Amsterdam to the Amazon, New Zealand to Zimbabwe. We never know where he'll be sampling the world's pleasures. Which is why the Johnny Dare Morning Show presents...
Where in the fuck is Whitfield Crane?
Yes, here to answer the eternal question, where's Whit? Is Ugly Kid Joe frontman, world traveler, and friend of the show, Whitfield Crane?
I know there's a little bit of a delay. We're on the cell, Whit, but you hear me okay?
Yeah, man. What's up?
Hey, brother. You're in one of my favorite places in the world. I've been there twice. The first time in the 90s. It's an amazing, amazing place. In fact, its name actually means mountain jewel. That's the first clue as to where in the world is Whitfield Crane. The name of the place you're at actually means mountain jewel. I don't know if you knew that.
I did not know.
Look at that. Look at that. Now, you have, we have so much to talk about, man. First of all, let's talk about wedding band. And I know there's a delay, so it's a little weird speaking, but the wedding band with Kirk Hammett from Metallica, Robert Trujillo from Metallica, this is going to be really fun.
Yeah, the wedding band, it's a trip, dude. I was in Holland, and I got a call from Robert. Last September, and those guys had a cover band there in Hawaii, and they needed a singer. So I came, I went to Hawaii and sang. It was due to Benji Weatherly's birthday, not his birthday, but his actual wedding. And it was beautiful, and then it was so fun that, funny enough, within a couple months, we got invited to play at the Pipeline Masters, which is, you know, at Pipeline, the Billabong, you know, Pipeline Masters, and we played that, and that was fun, and I thought that was going to be it. And then on July 21st last year, we played in Toronto to celebrate Cook's Monster exhibit, and then I thought that was it. And then now we're playing again in South Carolina on March 8th, and once again, Kirk curates, you know, an incredible, like, you know, we love monsters, like art, all kinds of stuff, monsters and stuff. So we celebrate monsters in the wedding band, and it's got a great lineup. It's got Kirk, it's got Robert, it's got John Theodore, Scott Quill, and we play covers, man, and it's joyous and fun.
Well, yeah, man. Listen, you've done everything from warm up, you know, Ozzy, you know, with Black Sabbath, to travel with Lemmy, you know, in which, on a side note, I saw the statue for the first time at the Rainbow a month or two ago. And it brought me to tears, man. It genuinely did. I wasn't expecting that reaction, but it's really a beautiful statue and a beautiful homage to him. And it's something, man. It's hard to believe he's gone.
Yeah, that's true. I was thinking about him recently, which is almost every day. But, you know, he lives on in you. He lives on with me and, of course, through his music. So... I'll be in LA in the next couple of days, so I'm going to go actually look at that statue. So,
yeah,
like for the plot.
Well, I remember getting the the photograph. It was his birthday party. You were there at his last birthday party. I got a picture with you and he on my phone, and I was like, oh, you could tell he was not doing well. But, man, all those the stories. So I'll let you guys know. You would make sure that your tour in Europe would kind of coincide with a Motorhead tour. And when yours was over, you'd ask Lemmy if you could get on his bus and travel with him for a few days.
Yeah, I mean, that wasn't on purpose. I just kept on ending up in London when they started tours. So in 2012 and in 2014, I just kind of ended up at the Motorhead band practice. They'd rehearse before the tours, and then I'd ask Phil Campbell. I'd say, hey, man, can I come on tour? And he'd ask them, and then they'd go, of course. So they'd stuff me on the bus, and I would hang out, and about every third show, I would get to sing Killed by Death, and then... And that was fun. And the craziest thing was July 4th, 2014, they played Hyde Park with Black Sabbath headlining. I got to jam. I mean, I don't imagine I'll ever get to play Hyde Park, but I did get to play with Motorhead. It was awesome.
Yeah. And just the stories of him talking to you about music and playing you music he loved and old rockabilly and doo-wop stuff and just his real taste in music. And when after you told me that and the bands that he loved, I started to hear it through all his music in different songs.
Yeah, if you ask him, and I asked him plenty of things, he figures the architects of rock and roll are Little Richard and Chuck Berry.
Sure.
And that's it. He loved Entrance of the Who. Loved the Who. I had no idea. I sat with him, and I'd just seen Daltrey and Townsend play at a small blues club acoustic in London. I was telling him a story, and I was like, who could ever, I said to Glenn, I said, hey, man, who could ever replace, John Entwistle? He said, I could, as in Lemmy could. And I'm like, no way. I was a hero, John Entwistle. He knew. So, yeah, he loved music. He lived music. He was a minimalist. He was an anarchist. He was a good dude. He was a gentleman. He was a myriad of things, and he was a rock and roll leader.
Yeah, no, he did not suffer a fool. That's a fact. His approval meant the world to anybody who was anywhere near him, because he was the last real rock and roll pirate, man. I mean, he's, or at least one of the last few, and well, no, you're carrying on in fine tradition, though. By the way, hold on, we have a guest for Where's Whitfield? Hold on here. Let me take this. Which one can we go to?
Either one.
Either one? All right, let me go to this one then. You have a guess for where in the world is Whitfield?
Yes, sir. I think that he might be in Jolla, Jolla.
Where's that?
I think it's Spain, but Google might have failed me.
Whit, are you in Jolla, Spain?
No.
No. No, then it's some time for another clue. Sorry. You're not in Jolla, Spain. By the way, where you're at right now.
That was a good guess, though.
I was telling you, Pook. It's Mountain Jewel is a pretty amazing place. 70% of it is covered in mountains north to south. And I'll tell you this. They say it is the riskiest place, one of the riskiest places to swim, scuba dive, or generally drive around in one point. It's a pretty... second world place in many ways, but it is very, very dangerous in many ways. Let me see this guess here. Where in the world is Whitfield? You're on with Whitfield.
Yeah, Whitfield. I have a feeling you're in the Carrizo Mountains.
Well, that's close, but not the cigar. No, I'm not. A good guess, buddy.
No, he's not in the Carrizo Mountains. I'll tell you, I'll give you another clue before we talk about some more stuff. There is something there. And it is worth between $3,000 and $10,000 a kilogram. And it is bird's nest soup. It is made from the saliva of these birds. They're in caves guarded by men who shoot first and ask questions later. No, and they 60 people a year die in these caves trying to harvest these nests, which are made into soup, and it's white or red and different variations thereof, depending on the more white it is, means it has less impurities in it. Have you ever had any of the bird's nest soup?
I did not. I didn't feel good about it, but I did see where the bird's nest soup is harvested.
Yeah, in the caves with the big bamboo scaffolding?
I saw it, man. I was there.
Yeah. I saw it. We went by on a boat, and there were legitimately men with rifles inside.
Oh, wow. So you basically, so you know what I'm doing. You've been where I'm at.
Yes.
You've done what I'm doing.
Yes, sir.
Yes. Radical, man.
Yeah, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. But yeah, 60 people a year, they say they lose with this. Now, I'm not going to say the name of the cave yet, but it's a major collection point for the outrageously valuable Swift's Nest, the key components to the Chinese specialty bird's nest soup. Nimble collectors scamper up fragile bamboo scaffolding to the roof of the cave to gather the nests. It's ridiculously expensive. So...
Yep.
Where, by the way, where's your next festival? I know you're coming back to the States for Wedding Band, but UKJ is on hiatus, or are you guys still out doing it for the summer?
Oh, UKJ's got a gig in Estonia in, mid-July. But the good news with UKJ is we just finished making an album. We flew everyone, including Mark Dodson from 1992's America's Least Wanted production, an English Dodson. We went to a studio, which is, anybody who's listening to this that makes music, you should go here. It's a place called Sonic Ranch, and it's in El Paso, and it's got the oldest, sickest gear, new boards, the sickest guitar. You could just show up with a backpack, and you could, if you have a creative, and you have any creative bones in your body, it's there waiting. So I need to go in there for 21 days in November. We're mixing the new UK Gary record in it'll probably get released, you know, somewhere in like around October. We got a massive tour in Europe and in October, November. So we'll release it live around then. But yeah, we're on fire.
Let me tell you something, man. Like, uglier than they used to be. I went back and I was listening to it again a few weeks ago. It popped up, and so I just went ahead and it popped up in one song at a time as I'm in shuffle. So I went back and listened to the whole record again, and I forgot how much I love that album and how goddamn good it is. I'm telling you guys, find it, get online. Uglier than they used to be. It came out in 2015, but that's a really great record, man. I mean, that's one to be super proud of.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're very welcome. Man, that just, I mean it. It's your voice sounds great. There's a reason. And it's crazy to me, after all these years, your voice, when I hear other guys' voices fall off, they're not as strong as they used to be. They lose their intonation a little bit. You are as hard singing as you've ever been.
Yeah, it's weird. I've talked to some producers that I work with, and usually, supposedly, I just ask around, I'm like, when do voices fall apart? Usually it's around 30 years old, 35.
Yeah.
And you're right. For some reason, I've got stronger and stronger. And that could just be because, A, I don't stress a lot. B, I sleep a lot. And C, I always put myself out of my comfort zone and sing different styles that, you know, like go out of my area. Thus, I feel like I have many ways to use and to kind of evolve within. So, you know, I'm not sure how or what, but yeah, it's a trip. Stronger and stronger.
You know what? I think it's breathing different air all the time. I think you're a constantly changing guy from continent to continent. From your latitudes and your longitudes are shifting at all times. So I think the key's got to be just got to breathe some different air once in a while.
I agree, man. I mean, for me, though, you know, I can really speak for me, because I don't know what anybody else thinks or feels. But I tell you, moving around and being transitory, you know, and meeting people,
yeah,
literally, like you say, breathing in the air. I keep you alive, keep you young.
Yeah.
So you know this.
I know.
You've been playing in songs for what, 30 years now?
Yes.
How long have you been
in this? I'm sorry?
30 years?
I'm sorry. I missed the first part.
You lost me?
I'm sorry. The connection got bad for me. I'm so sorry, Whit, but the cell phone got bad for a second, so I couldn't understand you.
Oh, I apologize. No, I was just saying, you've been singing songs for 30 years now.
Yes.
Isn't that cool? I've been singing.
It's for crazy. 30 years now. It's insane. Look, I remember the first time meeting you guys in an RV and being so knocked out. A, because you're in a rock and roll band and I'm a kid trying to get into business. So there's, you know, a real affection for a band there, right? And so, And there, but there was something else in Crazy Bastard, you and Klaus and just Evan Cordell and just the vibe and the just the nature of it all. The, I mean, the double finger to the world nature of Ugly Kid Joe, who just, you know, people may not know, there was this terrible band called Pretty Boy Floyd, and they were terrible. When I tell you terrible, like the kind of terrible, like it's a musical crime level terrible. And so it's just a double finger to the way the music scene was going. There was Pretty Boy Floyd, then there was Ugly Kid Joe. And that's it. If I have that story right, I remember that's that to be true. The story. Yeah. It's, did those guys?
That is true. It's a trip, man. It's a trip to, you know, there's so many things to be stoked on or grateful for. I mean, you know, once again, we did these long, long ago. And we're still in the game. And that's a beautiful thing. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, and we're going to turn people on the music and we're going to be inspired by, you know, different moments and manifesting, you know, whether it be a radio station or a song or a band or whatever. And that's just good, brother. That's just good.
Where in the world is Whitfield Crane now, though? That's what he does. In between bands, projects, singing, putting stuff together, causing general mayhem about the planet, he travels nonstop. So here, let me take a couple more because every single phone line is locked up now. Where do you think Whitfield Crane is? Where is he?
Yeah, what?
Where do you think he is?
I think he's in Sabah, Malaysia.
Ooh, almost, but wrong.
So close, man. All right, another guess. Where do you think Whitfield is?
Cambodia.
Really close.
Guess what, bro? Hold on. That is so close, but once again, they took a little bit off.
Yeah, no, you're at least close. Where in the world is Whitfield Crane? I can hear you.
Ali.
Where?
Jebel Ali.
I have no
Jamal
idea.
Ali.
Jamal.
The mountains. It's in the Persian Gulf. I was there in 93, 94.
Are you in the Persian Gulf, Whitfield?
I'm not.
It's not.
A good guess.
Good guess. I mean, they're all over the place up here. Where do you think? Where in the world is Whitfield Crane? Are you there?
Yeah. Is it me?
Yeah, it's you.
Oh, sorry, I'm there. Chiang Mai, Thailand.
Ooh. It is not your...
I'm not in Chiang Mai.
That's right.
Okay.
Hold on. One guess on that. Hold on, because I want to make sure that we keep going, because I know he just tipped it off.
Mm.
Listen, what did we say so far? It means Mountain Jewel. It's home of a very famous cave that produces bird's nest worth upwards of $3,000 to $10,000 per kilogram. For bird vomit, basically saliva, they use. It is a very dangerous place to scuba dive. It also has one of the greatest red light districts I've ever been. And I'll give you the tip off. It's where I learned. Wow, you're a beautiful, beautiful girl with a penis. That's what happened. It's called a lady boy.
Yep.
Yeah. The Rock, you're on the air with Whitfield Crane.
Is he in Phuket, Thailand?
You have just won, my friend.
Yes, that's it. He is in Phuket, Thailand. What tipped you off to Phuket?
Google.
Yeah, which clue was it?
The first one.
I wondered if that was gonna come up. I thought it was maybe, as I said it, I thought maybe we went a little obvious with it. But yeah, Phuket, Thailand, one of the most beautiful places, one of the saddest tragedies after the tsunami hit. That was terrible. I remember I was in Curacao with my friend George, who's a marine biologist, and I'd been to Phuket probably 6 years before, and that Christmas, New Year's, when that tsunami hit, I was sitting in a hotel, and I couldn't leave the room because I was watching this news of just the same place I'd been with this amazing destruction. Like, it's a terrifying idea how beautiful this place is and how easily you could be lured into the beauty and not even notice the ocean getting sucked out.
Yeah.
It's did you see the tower they built there? Because I thought, it's so basic, but obviously it makes good sense. It's a big concrete, like a parking garage almost style tower. If there ever is another tsunami, you can run up this and get above the water.
That's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. I learned my first.
Hey, good guess, bro. That was killer.
Yeah. Yeah. In fact, we're going to hook him up. I've got tickets. No, I put him on hold. He's getting tickets to Five Finger Death Punch, Papa Roach, and I Prevail. And I'm also going to send him over to the Volbeat show.
Can I tell you about a bit of my Thailand experience now that we know that I'm in Thailand?
Yeah, tell me. It is.
Check it out, dude. I've gone to like seven islands. I've gone to seven islands. You can get speedboats to various islands.
Yes.
Anyways, I've gone to like, you know, Koh Lanta, Koh Lipe, and there's this little island. It's called Koh Mook, M-O-O-K. And it's kind of, you know, disheveled and whatever, but it has this one beach, and it's called Charlie Beach. And I got up at 6 a.m., got on a longboat. You should look this up, Jen. Got on a longboat and go at low tide and end up, once again, when we went to the Grotch Caves in the Arctic, Spain, there's a cave called the Emerald Cave. And at low tide, you swim through it. You should like put this up so your listeners can see this. You swim through a cave just like Pirates of the Caribbean. And then it comes out on a white sandy beach, and you're basically almost inside. Like imagine like the bottom of a volcano hole. Like it's insane. I've never seen anything like it.
I just looked it up. Koh Mook.
Koh Mook.
Yes. I just looked it up. Holy cow, that's beautiful. Yes. That's gorgeous. Here.
So I did that, I don't get up at 6 a.m., but I did. And dude, and the thing is that beach, like all the other tourists, like it's just myself and my family, we didn't have to do this. You're swimming through the, you know, the cave, and you see the Pirates of the Caribbean, and lo and behold, pirates actually did stash their no pun intended booty in this cave. But if you see, it's a white sand beach.
Yeah,
it has an incredible array of, like, you know, botany or plants or whatever you want to call it, and it is so humbling and beautiful. You got to check it out or have your.
What
it looks like on
yeah.
The
K-O-H-M-O-O-K, and then Emerald Cave. So what it is, you'll come in from the water side, from the ocean side, and when the tide comes down, you can see that you could get underneath it. And basically, it was a cave-in somehow, or like a sinkhole, but it's in a super high cliff. So when you come into it, and you realize you're in this giant valley, and then the walls of it look to be a couple hundred feet high.
Oh, yeah. It's like 250 feet. Yeah. And you sit back. I mean, I was lucky enough, once again, I got there before anybody was there. So you just sat, like, laid on the sand and looked up, and, you know, you're in the real thing. So, you know, you see stuff like this, or they try to emulate it in the movies, but it really was the thing.
Yeah.
It's incredible. You take everyone to go. And then today, this is what I really want to say about. Today, I was like, okay, it's my last day before I go to L.A. for rehearsals. And so I'm really vetted. You know, if I'm going to go see anything animal-based, I want the animals included. Nice, you know, you don't want to see that as a good and do nothing to do whatever. So I found today, and I went, and found it. It was so rad. It's an elephant sanctuary, 14 elephants. All the elephants were rescues. And I went there, there's like 30 of us in our group, and we got to hang out and feed the elephants, and the elephants were beautiful and happy. And there was one, and you could like look at, you know, the ginormous, beautiful creatures. There's one mom elephant with her sons, like little elephants, like baby elephants, and one of the baby elephants' name was Fat Boy.
Yeah.
And the other baby elephant's name was Peter, of course, as you call him, Peter Chris.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll tell you this, it was so cool to go there, and then I didn't know this, but I'll express it. So there's these dudes called Mahouts. Mahouts are the elephant keepers, and they're with the elephants for life, but that's how it rolls. So how beautiful is that? And so what they do, this elephant sanctuary, is they go out into Thailand and they find elephants that are being treated as beasts of burden, and then they go and they haggle it out and they give them the Mahouts and they give them X amount of money, and then the Mahout and the elephant that no longer have to work comes to the sanctuary, eats bananas, sugar cane, and cucumbers, and it is awesome to see and see the elephants.
That's amazing.
So that's what I did today.
That's what you did today. Yeah, yeah. Well, you know, the only place I've ever seen a baby elephant was in Thailand, and it was so young, it had blue eyes.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know,
I'll never forget it.
You know, what a trick.
Yeah.
It's so beautiful.
Yeah, no, it'll make you cry.
I feel super electrified by the experience. So we're doing the radio show. You know, where am I? I just kind of go, yeah, I'm in Thailand. I thought, okay, that's what I'm saying.
Did you?
But what a good trip, man. What a good trip.
Well, it's a beautiful, beautiful place. And if you have time at some point, I don't know if you've been to Cambodia yet or not, but we got knocked out of a cave in Vietnam that we were supposed to go to this this giant, giant cave halfway down the country. And then because their government shut it down, we sidetracked over to Cambodia to Siem Reap and Phnom Penh and photographed Angkor Wat and Ta Prohm and all of that. But Cambodia, incredible. Like, the rednecks of Asia, like the most self-reliant, hardworking, get it done, wonderful. Just, you just recognize that blue, they're like blue collar, like just super wonderful people.
Nice.
Yeah, it's
You know what we should do, Johnny, you and I? Hey, Johnny, can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, I can hear you.
Okay, this is good stuff. You and I should go, straight up, we should go on an adventure. At least meet somewhere.
Yes.
Every now and then I look on the Facebook and there you are somewhere weird. So when are you going somewhere next and I'll come meet you? Where would that be?
You know what? That's I've got a couple different, there's a dumb one I really want to do, and it's just a terrible idea, is I wanted to go to Ethiopia to see that volcano, that Urt Al, but it's a really, it's a dangerous thing to do, so I'm not sure that you have to hire security, and it's a problem. It's a pretty inhospitable place. But I want to see a volcano if up close. I want to know what that is out of the earth. I want to know that process and die. And so that's one. The other is to get back to that cave in Vietnam and finally explore it before it's completely ruined. It's the biggest one in the world. They only found it about 10 years ago.
Oh, wow. I think you told me about this. Tell me more.
Yeah. So it's the Son Doon Cave in this national park, and it used to be, I'm not sure how they do it now, but it was a day's walk in. Once you got to base camp, it was another day's walk in. And we got all the way there, and the government said nobody but Vietnamese scientists can come in now. But we could fit in the main cavern, the first cavern they found. You could put a city block of 30-story skyscrapers inside the first cavern, city block of like New York City size skyscrapers. It's the biggest stalactites and stalagmites, the life they found, the waterfalls they found. I mean, it's straight out of a movie. It's like Land of the Lost level, amazing. It's just, and you camp days into it, 2 or 3 days into this cave, you keep camping further and deeper.
Wow. Let's go there.
Yes. Yes. I loved Hanoi. I loved all through Vietnam. I thought the Vietnamese were amazingly beautiful people.
You know, I tell you, dude, outside, I mean, not to be too hard on the United States, but I tell you, outside the States, there's a lot of fluidity that I enjoy. You know what I mean? There's no innate stress here in Thailand. Everyone's cool. You can smoke a cigarette or drink a beer or drive a scooter without a helmet. I think it's pretty cool. You know?
Yeah. Well, that's,
I've never been to Vietnam, but I imagine it's similar.
They believe in personal responsibility in those countries. They don't need a big, nanny state to go, hey, wear your helmet. Hey, don't do this. Hey, make sure they're like, hey, if you want to kill yourself, knock yourself out. I can't be responsible for you. You have to be responsible for you.
Yep, there you go.
Yeah.
I'm on that one day. Hey, I want to tell you something, Johnny. I want to say this out loud to you and your listeners. Is congratulations with your Super Bowl win.
Thank you.
Fantastic, man. Good for you.
I got a beautiful text from him. He was so excited. And I didn't know that you loved our coach so much.
Oh, Andy Reid is like a football saint. I love Andy Reid. You know, he's the walrus.
He is.
I was like,
he's like the longest tenured coach, right? He's like a good dude. He's a football Santa Claus. I love Andy Reid.
Yeah. In fact, his words, these were Whitfield, the coach. He goes, he's a diamond. I was like, I had no, all the things I know about you and all the things we've talked, like, I didn't know your love of him. I was like, this is fantastic. It was pretty amazing. And you know, for me, I'm not a big sports guy, but I am a story guy. And I love a story. You know, this Patrick Mahomes, this young kid, faces that kind of pressure on that kind of a stage. And you know, you've stood up in front of 50, 60,000 people and been the focal point of everything when you're a very young man. Like, you've got to live up to it at that moment.
And he really did. I watched it at like 6 a.m. at some like, you know, jazzy bar. I think I was on TV. That kind of thing. Let me ask you this question. Can you tell me about the celebrations in Kansas City?
It was cold.
Down. Were you there? Did you see it?
I didn't make my way down. I sat and watched it on television because by the time I got off work, it was a 3 or 4 mile walk in like 20 degree weather through the city after you found a place to park your car. So it was a huge parade. Everybody smiling. You know, a little rowdy. The players were out of their minds. You know, they're drinking. They jump off their bus. They walked into the crowd. Everybody was really, it was a huge celebration to see. It was an outstanding one. You know, Mahomes was great. Kelsey was great. Of course.
I imagine when I think about different towns, when I think of it, I feel like these towns, they're the last rock and roll. Like anytime I'm in your area, I'm like, ooh, I like it here. So I imagine, you know, it has a great sense of rock and roll, great sense of sport. So I imagine it was super loud. It's about time for me to show my face in your town.
I know.
I got a message from John and his wife the other day, and they're like, please come and hang out at our house. And maybe I'll go hang out with John, and then we can connect and get some beers.
Absolutely, man. He's literally a 15-minute drive from my house.
Okay, great.
Yeah, please do. And, you know, and I'm telling you, like, and you know those guys, but wait till you meet Kingston, his son, who is just the best. Yeah. And his daughter, Jada, of course, who's just the most perfect little lady ever. But that family, to watch them, like, King makes me laugh every time I'm around him because he's such a genuine, on-fire soul. Like, he's polite, and he's thoughtful, and he's funny, and he's talented. He can sing. You ought to hear the songs he's singing. I'll tell you the most touching thing that kid did when we lost our dog Miles, this big black lab that everybody loved, and he was such a part of the family. It's even so hard to talk about. But he sent a song that he wrote himself about when Miles got weak. He would lay in this big walk-in closet, and then King would sit in there with him.
Aww.
And so he wrote him a song about Miles laying in the closet. And it'll knock your ass off. Just a little kid.
Oh, wow, dude, that's so beautiful. Well, that's so beautiful. What I'm thinking is, I'll come back to L.A., I'll go jam with those dudes in the wedding band, and then I got time to kill, man. I'll probably go snowboarding if there's any snow that falls in Tahoe. But then other than that, like, what's the best month where it's not freezing and weird in your hood? Like,
I'd say May, June, May.
July, when you come there.
Yeah, May, June, July. Well, July starts to get hot, but May, June's perfect.
Okay. Well, I'll come for sure, dude. And then I'll get to spend some time. It's really nice to connect with you.
It'll be beautiful. I love you, brother.
You too.
All right, stay right there, man. Hold on. Hold on a second. Tell him thank you, please, Ryan. I know there was a huge delay. What a trooper he was for hanging in there, because I'm like, oh, this delay is terrible. But Phuket, Thailand, it's an incredible place. And that's where I learned for the first time that sometimes a pretty girl with breasts...
It's more than that.
...has a penis. I tell you, first time I'm there, I'll share this, and then we'll go to Mr. Lysak. Can you get Mr. Lysak ready? I'm with an ex-girlfriend. I'm in Phuket, Thailand. And I mean, I'm probably 27 years old. And
so you're a pretty girl yourself.
Yes.
Looks like.
Yes, yes. And this is how bad travel were. Remember, this is pre-cell phone, internet stuff. So we get off the plane in Bangkok. I have no plans. I knew I had a hotel there. But you had to, like, make phone calls back in the day.
Mm-hmm.
And that's how you did it, right? And they don't speak English very well. And you're calling Bangkok from a goddamn, you know, Westport, Kansas, or Westport, Missouri. And I get there. We spend a couple days in Bangkok. It's amazing. She gets sick. She gets over that. But she's a little lit. And on New Year's Eve, I think, man, we should do? Let's just get on an airplane, go out to this other place. I saw in this book called Phuk. I don't even know how to pronounce it, right? Because like,
right.
Phone... Okay, Phuket. And so we get there. I don't know what I was thinking. Why would I think there'd be a hotel room on New Year's Eve in a party town on the beach in Thailand? Like, the dumbest thing you've ever thought, right?
That is what you're dumb.
So we land at the airport, and we get there, we get a taxi, and I'm like, and I suddenly realize, man, because, you know, again, you can't get online.
And, no, it's not as accessible.
So, yes, and you don't even know where a hotel is. I don't even know what the word hotel looks like in Thai. So you have to guess if it's a hotel, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so I finally get in this thing called a tuk-tuk, which is a bicycle cab. They are shooting fireworks so big and so violently. Now, by this time, it's 10 o'clock at night. It's shooting, like, rockets are going through the open-air tuk-tuk, like, inside and out the other. They've got those big lanterns you see now. I'd never seen those before, those paper lanterns.
Yep.
That fly, but there are not hundreds or thousands. There's, like, tens of thousands in the air at all times. Rockets are just going crazy everywhere you go. And I finally, the exchange rate was 52-1 baht. The baht was their money. And I told a guy, I go, you see, this is 50 U.S. So You can do the math. I go, I need a hotel room, man. He's a young kid. And he's like, I got it. We go three different places. He's hauling. I mean, he's sweating. He's hammering it. We're just on the edge of town. It's not a very big little. It's a little village town. There's about a 9-story building, and they didn't even have their lights on the outside, but it was a real hotel. So we get checked in, give the kid his money, get up to the 8th floor, get her stash, 2 backpacks, realize it's 11:30 now, 11:25. Yeah. It's almost midnight.
You got to bust it.
Bam, downstairs. Hey, can I borrow that moped? So I borrow a moped from this guy at the front desk. Go down, get some Singha beer, get some beer. I try to find some kind of liquor, and I put it in a bag, and I'm trying to carry it on this moped. And I get about halfway back, and all of a sudden, every light in the city goes out. It goes completely dark. The entire city, boom. They burned up the power plant with all those crazy-ass lanterns, had landed and caught fire to something, and it burned, whatever it did, it burned up all of the power.
Jesus.
So now I'm like, oh, my God, I got a girl in a hotel. There's no power. Like, I mean, and I'm like, so I get back to this goddamn hotel. Now there's no lights on in this hotel, right? Mm-hmm. I go inside. I give the guy, my moped's outside. He's giving me, I don't know what to do type face.
Yes.
So the elevators don't work. So now I'm carrying this beer and this and liquor, and I'm having to, I get into a stairwell. There's no lights. There's no emergency lights. Mm-hmm. It is as dark as the inside of your mother. Like there's, I mean, there's, when I tell you there's no.
You're in an abandoned building. It's
you couldn't
you
see
know.
Your hand in front of your face. You could see nothing. All you knew is you'd run into something. So you would run up the stairs, hit a wall, turn left. Run up the stairs, hit a wall, turn left. Run up the stairs, hit a wall, turn left. Run up the wall. And I don't have a cell phone for a cell phone light. So I got to keep track of the doors. And I'm hoping I'm counting right. Even though it's only 8, you're like, well, what do they consider to be the first floor? Is this 0? Is this 1?
How many steps?
Is this 2? Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I get to the 8th floor. I kind of, I'm like, now I can see there's a window, at least in the hallway.
Yeah.
And so I can see, and I'm like, I smoked at the time. I ran up 8 flights of stairs in a hotel.
So it might as well have been 30.
Yeah. I'm just sure she's having a meltdown, right? Mm-hmm. She's sitting in the windowsill, 8 stories up, shoes are off. Completely calm, breeze in the room. I'm sweating. Like, are you? I've come to save you.
She's from like, you?
What? Watching the city burn. That was my. That's so I got the bouquet the next morning. I was pretty hungover. I went because it's pretty grimy liquor. Yeah. And that was when we went walking. I saw the chicken run out, I saw the car coming. And I went, and I couldn't look away fast enough.
Yeah.
And it popped the chicken.
Oh.
And it just went, boom, like,
no.
Boom, like, popped a chicken with his tire. And as God is my witness, before I took 3 more steps, an old lady ran out from outside of that, scooped that chicken, did not go to waste. That chicken went right in a pot in front of us. I mean, like, right, like, zoop.
She was like, thanks, mister.
Yeah.
You did the hard work.
Yeah. Yeah. And so that was the same day I learned about ladyboys. We went down, went to a bar. And yes, they had these boys were raised from the time they were young. They knew they could make money if they were raised as pretty girls, and they even get boob jobs. They have high cheekbones with beautiful black hair. Mm-hmm. Like, they're beautiful girls, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I'm like, hey. So I give the lady some money as she's dancing, and sure enough, she squats down and kicks it to the side, her panties. She's got a ding dong.
Mm.
Like, hey, man, you got a.
Woo.
That girl got a wiener.
You know that's down there?
Yeah. So I'm sitting next to these guys who are from Australia. And everything's, the one we were in, they were all whorehouses, right? I mean, they're all brothels. The strip clubs, you pay the mama-san some money, and then, you know, you can take the girl out. So it's an out date, quote.
Okay.
And so I can see him making the deal, and he's hammered. And then they walk away, and I don't know the guy, but I'm sitting, but I feel like I have a responsibility, yeah. Right? And I'm like, hey, man. He's, yeah. And I go, I don't know. I know you're making friends and all. I go, but these are guys. That girl's a guy. And he, what's your point, mate? I go, oh. Oh, I misjudged this terrible. I just turned my seat back around over here.
Yeah. No mistake.
Yeah, like, I was a dick. I was like, just trying to look out for you, brother.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.